You've seen it in film. You've seen it in animated television form. You've seen it in toy form. And today we're going to talk about the original book that inspired it all. I am, of course, talking about Todd McFarlane's Spawn, one of the premier books from Image Comics. Of course, we went through the whole Image Comics revolution on a previous episode. I want to say that was issue. It did not take long today. Episode 8. We'll link to that in today's show notes over at secondprintcomics.com. But actually, my co-host here, Remzo, is actually not available this week, but I have an absolute treat for you guys. In honor of the subject of today's episode, you're not going to believe this. I was actually able to get, as my co-host today, Mr. Todd McFarlane. Todd, welcome to SPC.
Yeah. What's up, Mark? How you doing, bud?
Hey, how's it going, man? You sound a little... Do you have a cold?
You know, it's a little chilly here. Other than that, it's fine.
Okay.
Glad you like Spawn, you know?
Well, I didn't say I liked it, Todd. We haven't even done the review yet. I think you're getting a little presumptuous here.
I mean, everyone knows you. If you're talking Spawn, you like Spawn.
All right, Todd. I know that I've had a lot of listener questions, actually, because I did advertise that you were coming on to our patrons anyway, and they all really wanted to know, out of all your Image co-founders, who was your favorite to work with?
I know Robbie Liefeld wants to say it was him.
He does a great impression of you, by the way.
I mean, you know, I'll listen to this show. I know. Does he still do a podcast? Does he?
I believe he does, yes. The Great Observations. You should check it out.
Larson,
talks about you a lot.
Larson's pretty cool. I mean, Lim. I think Lim's alive.
Are you talking? Are you referring to the L boys?
I know nothing about these L boys. I know nothing about them. Jim Lee, don't talk to him. Don't know where he is. Godspeed. You know, he was always kind of short, but you know he drew pretty well. I just keep to my own thing because I'm in charge of the comic books industry, and you know, Spawn's keeping all these things alive. So I just focus on myself. I was my favorite.
Well, the real thing I'm asking myself right now is, how long should we keep this routine going? We could do a whole episode this way, as far as I'm concerned. Of course, it is not really Todd McFarlane, if you didn't know. It is actually my co-host, Remzo W. Martinez. Remzo, what's up?
I'm going to get sued.
Could you handle the McFarlane voice for a whole episode?
I could probably down for another 5 minutes. Like, I have to...
go back and edit it back in. I mean,
I have to get that, like, Canadian-esque accent in, so I've been, like, sticking my tongue at, like, the side of my left, like, inner cheek, and it's like, no! You just got... Go ahead and make sure that you always bet on the Oilers when they play, and maybe one day they'll make it in the NHL.
It's a tough one to do. It is indeed a tough one to do. You know, I was actually rehearsing it and trying to do my own Todd McFarlane impression before the show, and I just couldn't get it down.
It takes true talent, Mark. Yeah. Real skill, true talent. A natural gift, as some may say.
Well, it seems you have at least a portion of that natural gift. I don't know if you're quite on par with Rob Liefeld, but it's close. Let's just put it that way.
I will not be voicing McFarlane when they do the Todd McFarlane biopic cartoon, I can tell you that.
Is that a real thing? That'd be awesome.
I think it should be. I would watch that.
All right, maybe that'll be SBC's first media project.
Could you imagine if it was like, you know, Archer or something? It was just like the early days of Image. I would totally watch that.
The Image
Boys?
That
would be so funny.
The L Boys. All right, well, anyway.
Rob, what you doing? Buying everyone Ferraris and camp and like Camaros?
I own this place. I own everything.
You guys got to not only listen to our episode about the Image Comics Revolution, but you got to watch that documentary. It really is. There are several documentaries about the formation of Image, but the Image Revolution is the one. It's the one you got to watch.
Yeah, there was the one that Sci-Fi did for the anniversary of Spawn called Todd McFarlane, Like Hell I Won't. And it was pretty good. That Image Revolution documentary, like that is like in the archives of all comic book history right there.
All right. Well, Remzo, before we get into Spawn today, which I think you'd have to say is the most successful Image book out of all the original Image books. I am, of course, partial to Savage Dragon, but in terms of sales, in terms of visibility, profitability, all those things, Spawn obviously does take the cake.
Miles, yeah.
Not even close, really.
I mean, it's the number one ongoing independently published book that's still creator owned ever. And I really think that if anyone else were to try and do that, I mean, they would have a long way to go because it's not even a close margin. Not even for Eric Larson.
I would argue that Eric Larson. Well, yeah, the problem with Eric Larson, I don't know. It's not really fair. I would think Eric Larson's feat is much more impressive because he has actually written and drawn every single issue. He is like, I think, 75 or so issues behind McFarlane because he has had a lot of delays and gaps in the printing due to the fact that Eric Larson is one person who basically does, you know, almost everything on this book, and then also does other projects. Sometimes he does a stint as Image's editor-in-chief, a stint as Image's publisher. Sometimes he hops over and does another book. Sometimes he doesn't work for Marvel or DC, and that always would push back his work on Savage Dragon. But Todd McFarlane has basically stepped away from a lot of Spawn as well, so I don't think it's quite the feat, even if he has the numbers slightly higher. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Rob Liefeld points out. He's like, just drawing the covers every once in a while doesn't mean you're still active involved, but I mean, you know, gotta give it where it's due. Ball don't lie. When you look at per issues, he's in the Guinness Book of World Records for that reason.
Well, impressive feat.
So, gotta respect the game.
So before we get into this, what was your experience with Spawn? Obviously, you were a mere twinkle in your parents' eyes when I first picked up Spawn number one. I have several copies of Spawn number one at home in the Connecticut vault. One of which is signed,
really?
Signed and certified Todd McFarlane from the New York Comic Convention.
Mark, you know you have to send me one.
Those are worth money, aren't they?
Wow, you're gonna be like this?
Just gonna send you one? Just like, give these things away like they're paperweights here?
You're gonna be like this?
Like they're Infinity Stones in the TVA?
Wow, I'm gonna move along before this gets contentious. My first exposure to Spawn was in 2006. I was at home sick with strep throat, watching FX reruns of You, Me, and Irene and other stupid late 90s comedies.
Wow.
And then Spawn came on at 7 p.m. and I was like, how did I miss this? This looks so metal.
The movie or the cartoon?
The movie. I didn't know about the cartoons until actually recently. I watched it during the coup, you know, during the plague, and I binge watched seasons one and two on Amazon. But you know, I loved it. I loved John Leguizamo as a creepy clown guy, and I don't even remember
why. So why that must be why. Did Danny DeVito play Violator in the cartoon? Then why do I associate Danny DeVito with Violator? Because you're right, it is John Leguizamo.
Because everyone thought that for a minute. People thought that Danny DeVito was the Violator because it looked so similar to his performance as the Penguin in Batman Returns 5 years earlier.
Apparently, he is like a very popular fan casting for him. In my mind, it was him, but I it wasn't. I just made that up.
Well, I'm going to also shock you with something else. Do you know what?
Not that hard.
Do you know what Gerard Butler's biggest role prior to 300 was?
No, I didn't. I did not.
I'll give you a hint. It was a musical.
I have no idea.
He was the Phantom in The Phantom of the Opera in 2004.
I certainly would not know that. I have not seen that film. I have no plans to see that film.
It's a good film.
By regular standards or Remzo standards?
It's a good. It's for free on YouTube. You can watch it for free on YouTube.
So you've seen it three times. Aye. Got it. All right. Moving along. We are going to dive into Spawn number one, which was published. And actually, it was published in May 1992. We were discussing before the show. So this was not one of the first books because we actually saw, I think we saw Savage. I want to say in late 91, we saw Savage Dragon.
Savage Dragon, Youngblood, Cyberforce.
Yeah, those sound about right. I think Youngblood may have actually been. I'm almost positive Youngblood was the first book to come out.
Yeah, because that Youngblood issue zero was what? Freaked out the stores and stuff, especially the image previews where they were promising books that were late by like 3 months.
Either way, this was part of the first run, the first group of creator-owned books that came out from Image Comics. And us. And at least in the beginning, Todd McFarlane was the sole writer and artist on this book, as we'll see in this run here. And I think before that, the only book he had done that on regularly anyway was when Marvel handed him the keys to his own new Spider-Man title. And of course, that was fairly short-lived before he and the L-Boys and a couple other guys decided to jump ship.
The Owlboys!
Jump ship and start Image Comics. But we're going to start right now with Spawn number one. And we start off with, we kind of see an image of the Earth from afar with some captions. And we have the narrator, who of course we'll soon find is our main character, Spawn. I don't belong. Not here. Not now. I have to get back there. The bet was rigged. He made me believe, and now there's darkness in my soul, and you see the Earth getting farther and farther away until it goes into blackness, and then the blackness emerges back into the city. where we do see a shadowy figure in a cape sort of standing on top of a building. He's asking why. We're just getting little glimpses of him as the lightning strikes in the background. My digital page won't turn here, so give me a second. We then get a classic sort of a Watchmen or Frank Miller style news recap. This one is in 1997, so there you're hearing a story. You basically see these same three news talking heads throughout this book as we go through the different years. Basically, we're going through the years between the death of Al Simmons, who is Spawn, spoiler alert, but that becomes pretty clear pretty quickly, and until he actually emerges into the Image universe in 1992. So it's a five-year span, and you get to see some of the sort of events that go along the way from the news. But things that we learn from these news clips, again, this is they talk about the death of Lieutenant Colonel Al Simmons. They talk about his wife. He was survived by his wife, Wanda Blake. There's also a mention that some sources say his presence in Botswana around the same time as Youngblood was present in that country was no coincidence. And shared Image universe alert, because the early Image creators, now while they all owned and completely controlled their own characters, they did attempt to have like a Image Comics universe in the very beginning. That definitely drifted away after a couple years when they kind of all went into their own little universes. But in the beginning, these creators were really making an effort to constantly reference these other characters, have different characters appear. We'll see that several times throughout this little run, the first four issues of the book that we're going to look at today. But this is something we also saw in Savage Dragon. We had Bad Rock appear in that book. We also had the Max appear in that book. So they were doing a lot of cross promotion in an attempt to really, an attempt to cross promote, I guess, is what you do. What did you think of when you looked at these Image books and saw all these characters starting to pop up here and there? Did you think that was a valiant attempt to sort of create a shared universe, or did you see it more as kind of a cheap marketing to sort of plug each other's books?
It was absolutely cheap marketing, because never do you see these characters actually be a prevalent role, even in the books where they were promoted to be crossing over with. Rarely did they lead up to any moments. Like, I can't think of a time where, you have something that rises to the occasion of like a Batman Superman team up, or a Captain America Iron Man team up, or something like that, or Spider-Man Daredevil. You never had that with Image, and I don't think they ever intended it to be that way, because at the end of the day, they're still operating as separate studios, and they all wanted to go off in different directions. So some of the situations where they wanted to have their cake and eat it too. And as we see real fast, it probably worked out for the better, because a lot of these independent studios under the Image banner are going to break apart within 5 years.
I will say, of all the Image creators, I do feel that Eric Larson seemed to try to do the most when he had other characters appear. He actually made attempts to kind of make them feel important to the actual story, whereas in a lot of other books, like the couple times we see characters referenced that we see them in the book here in Spawn, they don't really matter. They're just kind of thrown in there to be like, hey, this guy exists, maybe you should go buy that book, whereas Larson would actually attempt to really integrate them into the particular story.
To Larson's credit, compared to all the other writers, he had the most Marvel style book, because he knew how to plant things in order to do spin-off books, as we saw Freak Force. He knew how to, he knew how to set up additional supporting characters in a way that you don't often get with a lot of the Image books. It's like I always said, if you were going to take one of the Image characters and take them and put them into like the Marvel or DC universe, the only one that could really cleanly fit in either would be Savage Dragon.
Not only could, but has. Did you know that there's a Savage Dragon versus Superman book?
No.
Yes, that happened. Huh. That's a real thing.
I know that Spawn and Batman did a crossover, and I own that comic. It's just so bad, though. It was genuinely bad.
I'll have to revisit it. I know it lives in the Connecticut vault, so I'll have to see if it's living anywhere in Hulu. I mean, I remember enjoying it at the time, but when I was 16 and consuming everything, I pretty much enjoyed everything at the time, so it doesn't necessarily translate to whether it was actually good or not. But we did see that a lot with Eric Larson, and I think my favorite time that Eric Larson did a crossover and had another character was actually when he brought Spawn in and did a two-issue arc with Spawn, and this is one of my favorite Savage Dragon things ever, and maybe we'll talk about it in depth on a future episode. I did talk about it in an episode of Claire Continues, which you can find on the Second Print Patreon at patreon.com/secondprintpod. You thought we weren't going to shill, but here we are. But in that story, Dragon dies, he goes to hell, Who does he meet in hell? Well, Spawn, of course, and it makes sense. But it's actually really hilarious and really fun the way Spawn and Savage Dragon interact, because Dragon thinks that he's having a bad dream. He thinks that he like got knocked out, and he thinks the whole thing is hilarious. Like, he's just joking around with the devil. He's like, okay, you're the devil, whatever. And then God shows up and he's making fun of God. He's like, okay, yeah, I'm sure you're God, man. But really is God. It's when Savage Dragon meets God, and it's like one of my favorite Savage Dragon story arcs. Anyway,
would you compare that to really being like a genuine crossover between characters, or more like a Simpsons crossover where it's just passing and it's more for like a quick reaction or a laugh?
I mean, Spawn was in like the whole two issues. He was like fairly prominent in it. Did it really affect the Spawn book? No, not so much. Although they did do a later crossover not that long ago, like 5 or 6 years ago, when they both appeared in both books, and it actually did have a cohesive storyline. I feel like Todd and Eric seem to get along the best of the Image creators, especially in terms of how they seem to respect each other's content and each other's characters when they appear in each other's books. The way that Eric Larson always describes how the Image characters would interact with each other and interact with characters in other universes, he would say, so... It always happened for... They live in separate universes, but in each of those universes, those characters kind of exist too. So when you see, let's say, Spawn or Youngblood appear in Savage Dragon, that all happened for Savage Dragon in this Savage Dragon universe. But when you see Savage Dragon appear in Youngblood or appear in Spawn, that didn't necessarily happen in our Savage Dragon's universe, but it did happen in that Spawn universe and or in that Youngblood universe. That's just how Eric Larson looks at it. That's how he kind of takes license to always pay respect to the characters, but he can have a story that didn't necessarily need to happen in that character's universe, and that works for me. That works well enough for me.
Okay, multiverse logic, go for it.
It's just his way to that he answers questions about, wait, so this happened when in this book, so which one, you know, because they don't always all make sense with each other if you really tried to, you know, overlap all these stories in the quote-unquote shared Image universe.
I get it.
But anyway, moving along, we are getting news stories. That was quite a sidetrack. We also find from the, there's this like fashion reporter that you always see in these news clips too, and he's just really commenting on how Wanda was also seen out with this guy, Martin Alexander, her close friend from high school, who introduced her to Al Simmons at the Republican National Convention in 1984. I thought that was just a funny little tidbit that they threw in there. Meanwhile, we go back to Spawn, and basically the narrator Spawn here is basically just having all these flashbacks to his previous life. He's kind of trying to put the pieces together. He doesn't really remember everything. He's just remembering little flashes and glimpses of things. So he's saying, you know, I remember there was someone to love, and he, you know, kind of see a shadowy image of him walking with his what you presume is his wife, Wanda Blake. Someone to hate, you see an image of this guy whose name we will soon learn is Jason Wynn, and I was something special, and you kind of see him doing special forces stuff, and then you see him, he says, he turned on me, and you see this skull face, which is, you know, it's basically Al Simmons dying. So basically he was killed in some kind of operation. We then see, he says, and her, oh God, she's so beautiful, and I needed, he gave, I had to, you're seeing images of the devil. Basically, in short, Al Simmons, this guy, he's killed. We don't know how he's killed yet. We'll find that out later. Actually, we won't find that out in this episode. But, you know, if you continue with Spawn, you'll find that out eventually. You know, he basically makes a deal with the devil, and he says, look, I'll do anything. I'll give you my soul. I just want to be able to see my wife again. And that wish was granted. But as these things often go with the devil, when making deals with the devil, often the, you know, it's really the fine print that so Spawn does come back to Earth, but he comes back as this weird creature who is in this cape and doesn't really remember everything. And he kind of remembers, he says, like, he turned on me. He made this deal with the devil. And then we start to see this clock, this countdown. And right now it just says 9999, but that clock will continue to count down as we go along here. And while it's not clear right now what that means, I think it will be clear by the time we get through these issues. And he can't really remember his own life. He doesn't even necessarily remember who she is. Like, he doesn't even remember that this woman that the reader knows is his wife is necessarily his wife. He's just having these kind of vague memories of her, and he decides, like, he's gonna find her, he's gonna find his wife, this lady, this woman he was in love with, again, doesn't really even quite remember that it's his wife yet, and hopefully she'll help him figure out what's going on here. And he also says, I'm going to find him, I'm gonna find the one who betrayed me, even though he doesn't really know who that is either. So just off the bat here, what did you think of the primary introduction to Spawn? I think after like a few pages of getting short glimpses of him, we get a couple splash pages of, we get one that's like a close-up of his face, and then we get a full close-up of Spawn in all his glory. And I should say, much like Eric Larson with Savage Dragon, Spawn was the character that Todd McFarlane had created when he was a kid, and he was like basically his first comic creation too. So that was what's so cool about the Image Universe to me. It was all these very successful, very talented creators got to take their literal childhood creations and turn them into like amazing looking, you know, well-published, well-produced books. And that's just got to be the most thrilling thing.
It means something to make money off your dreams. what I really like about Spawn specifically, and I think this is what changed a lot of how comic book storytelling was done later, is that especially within the superhero genre, it very much sticks to the static hero's journey that we've talked about quite a bit. But with this one, instead of starting from the low point to understand the character where everything is kind of fleshed out and then you're seeing the trouble over the horizon, we're almost in the middle of it in a way, because we see the shadowy figure, we're getting introduced to all these people, and he looks like a bad guy. This is very much a mystery setting. I'll even dare say noir-esque. So the fact that you're introduced to this person who is maybe a superhero because he looks kind of evil, I was pulled in immediately. And I mean, just to really lay it in, like, this is one of those books I think everyone should have in their collection. I have Spawn Issue 1, the director's cut, where every other page is a sketch page so you can compare. It was only like $5-6. It was a good anniversary copy for a Spawn 300. And, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like he always intended on Spawn being in a film. Yeah, so when it got put in animation and it got put in a film and everything else, he was like, oh, well, you know, I did the work for everyone. Because he drew everything, not just like how he had done with Spider-Man and The Incredible Hulk, but he wrote it almost like he was storyboarding. Like it is like you're reading a movie, that phrase that we've brought up so often for like Gabriel Delato and others. So, I mean, it's the best way to break the standards while sucking in your reader. It's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does very much feel like reading a movie. I think that's a good way to describe it. Moving along, we then meet Sam and Twitch. They are your kind of buddy cop investigators that you get here. Sam is this big, kind of beefy looking dude, where Twitch is this kind of squirrely looking fellow with glasses and a mustache. So they make quite a pair there. When we first meet them, they're investigating these deaths of these random mobsters. This guy was thrown out a window, so that will kind of tie into our story as we go along here. We then go back to Spawn. He goes and he stops some bad guys in an alleyway. And as he is kicking this bad guy ass, he kind of breaks back into his mind exploding into these other images. He sees this image of death and he's saying, oh no, not again. And then you see him kind of being pulled into these images from his past. He's seeing images of Wanda, of the woman he loved. He's basically just like has kind of a freak out and meltdown. He's now at this point, he is seeing images of his actual funeral. And then he's seeing images of he sees his wife at the funeral. And then the image of his wife in this sort of dream nightmare, it turns into an image of the devil who's like in her funeral attire. And then when Spawn comes to, he's basically like crying and convulsing and is in the arms of the naked chick that he had just saved from being raped in this alley. This chick is consoling this dude in the cape who just ran off all these guys. So, man, what a freaking day for this chick, huh? She starts off about to be raped by these dudes, then gets saved by this freak-looking dude in a cape and chains and this weird mask, and then before she knows it, this guy is crying in her arms. What a chain of events it must have been for her.
Just a regular Wednesday night in Chicago.
Just a Wednesday evening in Chicago. We then go back to the news, only now it's the news in 1992. Basically, everything in these news stories is all about mob shit. It's all just these stories of these various mobsters who were found dead and killed in various ways. And there's also some stories about how the police are going after certain mobsters. So guess what? The mafia exists in Chicago. I don't know if you guys realize that, but
yes.
that's true both here and in real life.
But they say it's so safe.
Spawn is then walking around the alley, just kind of freaking out. And finally, he goes and rips this mask off. And then he starts to take this costume off. And he sees that his skin, his arms are all charred up. And he says, like, Jesus, what am I? And then he starts crawling, crying, and like just falls down into by this trash can. Meanwhile, we go and see that Sam and Twitch are still on the case. And then as we wrap up this issue, we see a scary looking motherfucking devil creature who is called Malabogia, cackling away, saying, ha 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 ha, Simmons, if you think you've got problems now, I promise your troubles have just begun. Very standard supervillain scary type talk. What did you think overall of the first issue of Spawn?
The theology teacher in the back of my head that I had to deal with for years at Liberty University wants me to correct you. It's actually Malbogia. Malbogia.
Oh, really? Okay. I have always, since I was 12 years old, said Malabogia.
Hey, if it makes you feel better, having been a Spawn fan before I went to college, that's what I thought it was. Malbogia is actually the name, I think, taken from a book on demonology that was published in the 19th century. Basically, in hell, you have a hierarchy of hell, and Malbogia is the equivalent of like a governor or general. He basically is like a big demon that, you know, controls all the other demons. So he's not the biblical Satan.
We don't have to get into this conversation again about the Ghostwriter and Mephisto and Lucifer. And
yeah, that was a whole thing. Go back and listen to our Ghostwriter episode.
Well, that makes sense because so when Savage Dragon goes to hell, he meets Lucifer as a devil. And that is not the same as this Malabogia, but that actually makes sense based on the hierarchy you laid out. So fair enough.
Yep. So basically, and that's why, you know, we'll get to it later, but yeah, super freaky. I remember for years as a kid, like when the Spawn toys were like really popular, like my parents were like, oh, you don't want this. He's a bad guy. They legitimately thought that Spawn was a bad guy. So for a while, until I started picking up the comics when I was like in my late teens, until I saw that movie in 2006, I thought that Spawn was a bad guy. So, you know, this whole thing, it's like it's darker than Ghost Rider. It's more violent than Punisher. And he certainly ain't Batman.
Yeah, it's very much like many of the Image books. I wouldn't put it quite, I don't think they go quite as far as Valiant in being so overtly adult. But this is definitely much more adult than any book you would get out of Marvel or DC at this time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they jump really straight into it.
So moving on to issue two, we then meet The Violator. Now, The Violator, I wrote down, I hear Danny DeVito's voice. I really think the imagery is, if it's not based on Danny DeVito, then I don't know, because it looks like Danny DeVito.
It was based primarily on Danny DeVito's Penguin.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's what you said earlier. So yeah, that makes sense. I guess that makes perfect sense. And that makes sense to why I always hear Danny DeVito's voice in my head where I read this character. But
well, fun fact while I'm at it, because I got to interrupt one more time. The character of Wanda, Al Simmons' wife, was actually named after Wanda McFarlane, Todd's wife.
All right. Well, there you go. I believe even Al Simmons is actually someone who worked at Image Comics, too. I think he was someone that Todd was a good friends with, too.
He was a friend. So to have, theoretically, like his best friend banging his wife is kind of weird.
I guess when you think of it that way, it is pretty weird.
When you think of it that way.
Although that is part of the premise of this, of what we'll learn as part of the storyline here.
Best friends banging wives.
Anyway, we see the Violator, who is this short, stocky, he's Danny DeVito. He's Danny DeVito with clown makeup. There's no better way to describe him. And he's in this alleyway and he's saying, and then I'll tell him if he begs me really, really nice, like I might only amputate one leg, but if he puts up a fight, I'm going to have to rip his innards out, make fillets out of his lungs, make a milkshake out of his heart and soft boil his eyeballs, because I'm the Violator. He's talking to a cat. He's just in this alley talking to a cat, and I find this hilarious. The cat's like, meow, and he goes, impressive, I know. What do you think of my DeVito Violator impression?
It's actually pretty good.
All right, that's how I hear the voice. Anyway, we meet the Violator, and basically he's just this wacko crazy clown. We don't really know much more about him right now, but we know that he seems to have murderous intentions by the way he is talking to this cat.
This did not help my fear of clowns as a kid.
No, this would not do that. And he wraps up saying, I'd hate to be Spawn, because he's here. He makes clear through his diatribe that he is here on Earth in Chicago to get to the Spawn for whatever reason. And then we go back to Spawn. He's kind of a perched on this cross on top of the building here. And now he's still determined to find his wife, as he makes very clear in his narration. I've got to find her. Let her know I'm back. I'm alive. People think I died 5 years ago. What's she going to think? Not going to matter much if I can't find her. And he's basically just, you know, he talks to himself a lot. That's what you do when you're an undead freak who gets shot back into the real world 5 years after you die. You get a pass, you know.
He gets a pass.
And he's kind of just up there on the roof, just thinking to himself, thinking, man, I died. I've come back. I got to find my wife. I don't even know her freaking name right now. But I got this really gross skin. What am I going to do? Next thing you know,
aloe vera.
Lots of aloe vera. He's perched up on this cross when he sees this freaking clown waving at him across the street. He sees the violator waving and screaming at him. And he just looks over. He's like, I don't know what that guy's doing. And he just kind of like takes off. Moves on. We then go and see this mobster at this building, the Dawn Corp building. I'm not sure the significance of that or if it comes into play later. But yeah, this mobster guy is pounding on this door. He's saying, open up the door. He wants to go talk to his boss. But this freaky arm just comes out and just pulls him in and rips his heart out. We kind of see a partial face of this scary looking creature. And this creature just says, your boss is unavailable, but he did say he wanted you to join him tonight. And then we get a big splash page of this creature. I don't want to quite reveal who this creature is yet in case everyone hasn't figured it out. But he says, night, night, boys. And you just see blood and hearts scattered all over. And what do you think of... I think we'll know by next issue what this creature is. But what did you just think of, like, the visually of this scary ass freaking creature out there killing mobsters? I remember seeing this as a kid and being like, holy shit! Like, he designed a scary ass, scary creature.
Let's think about scary characters like this. We've got Ghost Rider, scary, but I mean, even then, it wasn't until Danny Ketch came around that he was a little bit edgier than normal. Then you got the Punisher. Who's still hanging around Spider-Man doing stuff. Then you've got Son of Satan, who is definitely part of that 70s era. There's nothing intimidating about him. They straight up scare the hell out of you in these panels, especially for when you compare it to what was on the market at the time.
And the blood and the guts, like... Nowadays, I mean, you know, Marvel got a little bit edgier after this at points, probably responding a lot to what we're seeing from companies like Image and Valiant. But this was like, there is just blood splattered everywhere. And you would not see this kind of gore in a mainstream comic. Not at this time.
I think Image refused to do anything by the Comics Code Authority.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. They told them to fuck right off.
Which is why they could get away with this.
They gave no fucks. Like, oh, you're not going to approve our comics? Cool. No one cares about that stupid little dumb thing on your...
We'll make money without you.
Bud. And then we go back to our news talking heads. They are just talking more about the deaths of these random mobsters who seem to be being killed. Of course, we see they're being killed by this scary fucking creature here. I got a kick out of the fashion reporter here who has grown a mustache since we first saw him in 1987. His whole story is about how the Youngblood team are moving to the same costumes away from their individual, outfits. So, and he's not upset about that. He really liked that.
Youngblood, the Jersey Shore of superheroes.
Yeah. We also have another story said that Wanda Blake was doing all this charity work, and there's all this fund that was set up in the honor of her husband Al Simmons, who is Spawn. And yeah, that's what she's up to, but doing a bunch of charity work with this fund set up for after the death of her husband. We do keep seeing these numbers appearing as we keep going here. Whereas before they said 9999, now they say 9995. So there's some kind of countdown here. Meanwhile, Spawn is kind of figuring out that he has powers, that he sort of has like magic powers. And he decides like, all right, well, if I have these powers, maybe I can just turn myself into a human again. So he kind of does like a bloop, and this blue energy kind of appears around him. And then he turns into a human, but he turns into this white guy. And he's like, man, what a jolt. Man, I feel good. I'm feeling great. But wait a minute. And he looks at his hand and he's like, he sees that he's white and he's like, what the fuck? Not again. No, I'm a black guy. What is this? he's not happy about the white privilege whatsoever. He's very upset to find out
that's the real superpower.
Yeah. That's the real power. Yeah, so he turns into a, it's kind of like, it's just another one of those like fine print deal with the devil kind of things. Like, yes, he has the power to turn into a human, but he doesn't have the power to turn into a human that looks like himself. He has to turn into this fucking, you know, dorky looking blonde white guy. So, which is not at all what he wants to be. So he decides that's not a form he's really going to take if he can help it.
He should check his junk.
We then see Sam and Twitch. Basically, in these first two issues, we just get glimpses of Sam and Twitch. They become more important characters later on in the series. But for now on, I will be calling these Sam and Twitcherludes. What do you think? That's what I call the one-page appearance by Sam and Twitch. As we just, all we do in these scenes is basically find out, yeah, they're looking into these mob killings and they're trying to figure out what's going on, and it's a big mystery.
I always thought of it as Harvey Bullock and Beaker from Sesame Street. No, it was Muppets. Beaker was Muppets. So it's Harvey Bullock from Batman and Beaker as a person.
That works. That totally describes them very well, I would
what
say.
What do you think, Twitch?
Moving along, we see this creature, who I will not name yet, in case anyone is waiting in suspense. This creature is just killing more mobsters in bloody fashion again. Meanwhile, Spawn has decided, like, I'm not going to be a white guy. I'm not going to turn into this human form, because fuck it.
I reject my white privilege.
I reject my white privilege. I am not interested in it. And he goes into more flashbacks. This time, he is seeing this image again of this this bearded looking dude, and he remembers his name now. His name is Jason Wynn, and he's kind of remembering their relationship a little bit, that he says, you know, he was his boss. He was actually the one that the president of the United States said would take care of him, be his mentor. He taught him everything. You know, he taught him how to fight, how to kill, how to obey. But eventually they had a falling out because he saw that Jason Wynn was getting really brutal, was really conducting evil and not really doing good, which is, even though Al Simmons was doing some pretty nasty shit as a mercenary, he did have a conscience and he did go into it seemingly, you know, to do good, you know, to fight for his country or what have you. And he at some point saw himself going down a dark path. He saw that Jason had become truly evil. And so that's why their split had gone on. And we then see that Spawn takes a little stumble, because he always kind of gets messed up when he has these flashback moments, and falls all the way off this building that he was perched, all the way to the ground, all the way into the alley, as this mysterious countdown continues to go. Now it's at 9, 4, 3, 2. We then see even more murders, even more hearts flying out of rooms, as this monster continues to kill random mobsters. And then he says, this is getting boring. We then see Spawn waking up in the alley. He wakes up to see the Violator, who is there just yapping at him. He says, hey, mister, you need help? Come on, bud, shake it off, you know? I couldn't tell if you were just tanked or what. Not that it matters. I enjoy a nip every now and then, too. But that moaning of yours didn't sound like the enjoyable kind. Anyway, I'm not going to keep reading the Violator's monologue.
That's actually really impressive.
This is my tryout for the role of the Violator next time they do an animated Spawn.
There you go.
Or you can actually hire Danny DeVito to play him physically, but have me do the voice. Because, you know, Danny DeVito's lost a little bit in his old age.
It's like somebody else being Henry Cavill's chin in the Josh Whedon Justice League.
Spawn then, this is when we get the name Spawn, because Violator says, you're the Spawn. And he's like, Spawn, what the fuck's a Spawn? He's like, yeah, that's right. And then he goes, Violator goes on to describe all the various ways that he could kill Spawn if he wanted to. He's just going on and going on and going on. He's like, so how do you, and Spawn's just like, all right, whatever. He's not really taking him too seriously because he's just this short, fat clown. He's like, all right, so how do you know about me? Like, do you know where my wife is? He's like, never seen the chick. Stop using that G word. He said, because Spawn said the word God earlier. Since my cover's been blown, let me tell you why I'm here. Whether you believe it or not, I could beat you silly with one hand behind my back, or I could rip the toenails from your feet and sever the tendons in your calves. And another thing, Mr. Big Shot, I could rip your spine out and use it like a whip, and I could snap your bones like the brittle chunks they are, and I could tear your head off and use it for a basketball, and I could cut you up into bite-sized pieces and mail you across 50 zip codes. I really enjoy doing this. Danny DeVito. Tornado Violator. I'm not going to lie. Are you scared yet? And basically, Spawn is not scared. He does not take this seriously at all. And basically just says, listen, buddy, I don't have time for this or you. And he's saying, come on, mister, have a heart. And as we see this final splash page, we see that this creature, the Violator, the clown creature, has turned into his other form, which is, of course, that scary freaking monster who has been killing mobsters for the past two issues. So what'd you think of the wrap-up here? What'd you think of the reveal of this goofy-looking clown Violator is actually also this scary freaking creature that we've seen killing mobsters all issue?
I can only imagine what it was like when it came out, especially with the Tim Curry version of It. I mean, this is when clowns are finally scary. It's no longer like, you know, the I'll call it the pre- Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns Joker, where he was really just kind of like a throwaway character. This is when clowns are more like John Wayne Gacy. And I think John Wayne Gacy was...
Well, John Wayne Gacy's pretty scary too. I mean,
yeah, John Wayne Gacy is pretty scary, but I'm saying like this is where they're really making that transition. It's not Cesar Romero chasing around Adam West. It's John Wayne Gacy.
No, it's certainly not Cesar Romero. Certainly not Cesar Romero. We move on to Spawn, issue number 3. And we start off where Spawn says, Wanda! Wanda? Wanda? No, he says it does not sound like
Wanda!
He's like, that's it. He finally remembered his wife's name. So, like, the further that he goes along, the further that he's living on this plane of existence, so to speak, the more that the memories are sort of his past life 5 years ago are sort of coming to him. And he remembers, talking to the devil or whatever devil creature he made this deal with. He remembers saying, let me see my wife and you can have my soul. And, of course, that's what happened. He does get to see his wife, as we'll see pretty soon. But I don't think it's quite the deal he was looking to make.
This is what happens when you make deals at a VA hospital.
You really want to move to the private hospital before. We then see, we finally see this cackling, this laughing demon who is, of course, how do you say it? Malbolgia. All right. That kind of flows better, I guess. And he is saying, oh, Simmons, you poor, pathetic fool. Threaten away, you little maggot. I'll do you no good because you've been locked into a deal I can't lose. I've dealt with your kind a million times. And actually, that's true because as we will find out later in the Spawn series, Spawn is one of many Spawns. There have been Spawns all throughout history, and that is what leads later, very much later on in the series, where we will see all sorts of different Spawns. We'll see like a medieval. Actually, I think we see a different Spawn in issue 9, which is where we see the debut of Angela, because it did not take long for Todd McFarlane to start bringing in new writers. So I think it was issue 9. I know because it was the first appearance of Angela, which I also own at home, and that was Neil Gaiman introducing that character, and I believe she was in that book hunting a medieval Spawn. So that was the first time we saw a different iteration of Spawn. But, you know, Todd has brought in many, many, many different iterations of Spawn throughout time since the series began.
It was the Ghost Rider motif. It's this idea that you can have people throughout the same time carrying the same moniker.
Yep. It's just about whenever Malbolgia can find another sucker to make the same freaking deal. And he seems to be able to find these guys pretty easily, you know, every generation or so. So Malbolgia just goes on basically an evil monologue, and that's about it about all the evil that he's going to conduct here. And then we then go to another Sam and Twitch interlude, where they're just, you know, talking buddy cop stuff and investigating these murders of these mobsters. And Twitch is kind of like, look, like not Twitch, but Sam, he's kind of like, look, he's doing us a favor. Like, he's killing mobsters. He's killing these bad guys. But, you know, they're cops, so they still got to kind of do some investigation and try to figure out what's actually going on here.
As one does in Chicago.
Yes, they're buried under bureaucratic bullshit is the summary of this scene, as you might imagine, again, in Chicago, where all bad things happen. We then get more Violator stuff. We see Danny DeVito Violator kind of singing, doodling, laughing it up in the alley. And he says, I know a hero who's gonna die. Doop-de-loop-de-loop-de-loop-de-lie. I'm a poet and I don't even know it. Better yet. And then you see him transform. I really like this tiny little panel here where you see him transform like via the shadow into the Violator. He says, I'm the Violator. And if I don't kill you today, I'll try it later. Dang, I'm good. So he's having a good time. You know, he's evil. He likes to kill mobsters by ripping their hearts out, but he has fun doing it. That's what I appreciate about the Violator.
It's so funny because, like, in the film where he was played by John Leguizamo, to know that the guy who played the Violator is also the voice of Manny the Sloth from Ice Age.
I did not know that, nor have I seen Ice Age. So I'm a 41-year-old man, Remzo.
It was good in 2002.
I'm sure it was. That explains it. 2002. That was when I was 22 years old, which is not coincidentally about when my comic book dark period began, because I was getting into other things at that point.
Yeah. That's when your pop culture references also began to die.
It's when everything basically fades away, yes.
Yeah.
We go back to the CIA, New York headquarters. I also said another mobster, but basically, CIA, another mobster. What's the difference here? We're splitting hairs at this point. This Miller guy is super, super sexually harassing his secretary here. He's even saying, like, oh, you know, it's almost midnight, Linda. Why don't we call it a night? Perhaps I can buy you a drink. And she's saying, no, thank you, Mr. Miller. My husband's waiting for me. And he says, oh, how is the new hubby anyways? Surely he won't mind if you're not home right away. What a freaking scumbag. Like, this chick just got married and he's already just going to town. But I guess when you're a CIA boss, you can kind of do those things and get away with it.
Cough, cough, Alan Dulles.
Yeah. Cough, cough.
And he's looking in this file cabinet, and then we see this is not another scene of Violator killing people. This is actually when Spawn appears at CIA headquarters, because he is kind of investigating his own past, and he says, "You listen."
Who are these people dealing crack to underserved communities?
Yeah, I guess he was going through the files just to find out more about himself, and when he saw this guy harassing this chick, he just decided to stick around and scare the shit out of him. So Spawn shows up, grabs this guy by the neck, and he's like, you listen good, where is that? Since you're divorced, you haven't paid a penny in alimony. I don't know how he had the time to do that research. Maybe he just presumed it, or child support. I highly recommend you correct this oversight quickly, because if I have to come back again, she'll get the money from your life insurance policy. Do we understand each other? And he just says, sure. He's like, good. Some of us who would give our lives to have a wife or family. So it really offends Spawn that this guy is out there philandering on his wife and kid when he didn't even get the chance to have a kid, really, before he passed and made this deal.
Exactly. No deadbeat dads in hell.
Nope. Malbolgia, meanwhile, is just having a blast. He is watching these things play out, and he's really liking it, because he thinks that the Spawn is turning evil. Like, he sees him, you know, threatening to kill this guy. He's like, oh, great, good. He's turning into this evil thing that I need him to be. So Malbolgia...
Wait, no, he wants him to pay his child support.
Yes, how evil. But yes, I guess in his mind, he sees Spawn going down a dark path, which is the path that Malbolgia is trying to send him down, as we will learn later on the series. We're not going to get the full scope of it in these first few issues, but Malbolgia has plans for Spawn. He's not just a random guy that he's just, you know, just kind of fucking with here. And then we move on, and Spawn is trying to figure out why Wanda lives in Queens, and you know who's going to find out? White Spawn is going to find out. So he does turn back into his human form, where he is this...
By the power of white privilege!
By the power of white privilege! And he turns into the white guy, turns into White Al Simmons, and heads to Queens to go try to see what his wife is up to. She opens the door, and she is smoking. She is in this, like, elegant dress that is very, very fishnetty and revealing.
God bless you, Todd McFarlane. God bless you.
She opens the door while the dog is growling. This mangy-looking dog behind her is growling. She says, good day, may I help you? And White Al is just stunned. He's like, my God, she's even more beautiful. This is narration. Meanwhile, he says, instill in the Spawn, like Spawn style of the voice of the the voice bubbles. So I wonder what his voice is supposed to sound like here. Like, is it supposed to sound Spawny? I'm picturing it as a nerdy white guy voice. But he says, hello, I'm from the what's the matter? It looks like you've seen a ghost. She says, excuse my appearance, we're just trying on this, just happened to be trying on this sexy dress when you came by. Big business party tonight, you know, the kind, lots of people, lots of food, minimal fun. Who talks to a random guy that just showed up like this, by the way? But if I don't go, then the whole office gets uptight. So what do you think of it? Really? Asking this random guy what you think, and he's like, you're gorgeous. I mean, it's gorgeous. And she's like, well, thanks.
I'm
anyway.
The pizza delivery man, and you don't have cash.
Thanks anyway. You rang the bell. What can I do you for? And meanwhile, the dog is like biting at his shoe here. And he's saying, all right, look, I'm from the SPCA, and we're going around the neighborhood checking to see if the dogs have been licensed. We're having a special this week. You can renew the license for $12 or register for $15. He's making up this absurd reason that he's at the door. But he is interrupted just in time by shouts of, Mama! Mama, why you go, Mama? And then this little girl shows up and she says, excuse me, sweetie, Mommy had to get the door. Man wants to know if your doggy is okay. And then, we see his narration captions here. Response is, a girl, the file didn't say anything about a child. How can it be? We couldn't. I thought she couldn't. It's taken him a while. I mean, the math alone should be enough to realize he's been gone 5 years and this kid is like a year. But he's still taking him a minute to process, like, wait, this can't be my kid because I wasn't able to get the job done, I guess. And she says, oh, I'm sorry. She's only 15 months old. She's still so clingy. Every time I leave the room, she thinks I'm abandoning her. Silly girl, Mommy would never leave you. And that's.
Do they talk at 15 months?
I don't know. Never raised a kid, Remzo.
I don't know.
I can't tell you. I actually have no idea. I think they start saying little words before that. All she says is mama here. That seems reasonable. I think they can say mama at 15 months. Maybe you'll find out someday.
It's like the teenagers from Scream, all played by 30-year-olds. Have you ever seen Wes Craven Scream?
Yes. No, Scream is great. I love the original Scream.
Those were not teenagers.
That was a late high school / college movie for me. So I was fully all right. into all the Scream films. Don't you worry. I get that's the last, actually the last pop culture reference I get is Scream. That's where it ends for me. Spawn is kind of again having this revelation here. He's like, we always wanted children, but something wasn't right. Doctor said it was no use, but it was me. God damn it, it was me. Like, he realizes it was definitely him. Is the reason they couldn't have a kid, because she had a kid with someone else. And then we see these kind of bubbles appear again. So this causes Spawn to pass out. White Spawn to pass out on the ground, as he often does when he has these moments. Meanwhile, Wanda yells, Terry, quick. Get down here now, I need help. So this guy comes and shows up, and as White Spawn comes to, he's like, where am I? Jesus, the file was true. Terry did marry Wanda. So I guess he had already read this in the CIA files that he had uncovered, but I just thought they were bullshit. And so he's still shocked again when he sees this guy Terry, who was, I guess, his best friend. So, not only is she married, not only did she have a kid, which is something Al could not do for her, but she did it with his best friend. What a revelation. What a punch in the stomach that's got to be. And, Terry's trying to kind of calm down here. He's like, hey, buddy, take it easy now. Do you want us to call a doctor or something? I could call your family or your wife. And he's like, oh, I don't have a wife anymore. He's like, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. He's like, yeah, me too. Kills me every time I see her. And Wanda's like, oh, she must have been something really special. And he's saying, more than you'll know. Thing is, I don't know why I lost her. Well, because you fucking died, dude. Yeah, you do. I mean,
he would have picked up on that part.
Yeah, I mean, he's having a hard time putting things together. I mean, I get that his memory's a little choppy, but a few things he should be able to put together here. Basically, he's a man out of time. He's trying to figure this whole thing out. She does mention, though, that the dog loves him. And she's like, wow, the dog really loves you. And I don't know. It looks like he's biting him still. So I don't know. But maybe it's just, affection, canine affection.
It's like feral love.
And she basically says that dog doesn't like anybody. She hasn't liked anybody since Al died. So that's like obviously a little clue. I mean, we already know he's Al. So she's not really picking up on it. But the dog knows. The dog knows that Al is Al. And basically, we go back now to another page where Spawn is just, I like this shot. We see like a skyline of Chicago and we just see the word no, and then we cut to Spawn, who's just flipping out and screaming. He's basically screaming at this devil, cursing the devil that he made this deal with. He's like, you want my soul, come and get it, just try and get it. Why are you torturing me? What kind of sadistic pleasure are you getting from this? I was gonna give it to you willingly. Do you hear? I was gonna give you my soul. I just wanted my wife. Can't you understand that? Problem is, when Spawn made this deal, at least according to what he said before, he didn't say, I'll sell my soul if only I can live happily with my wife and have a children and a family. No, he didn't say that. He just said, I wanted to see my wife again. And that was a mistake from Spawn because, really? The devil has held up his end. Spawn just saw his wife. So the deal is really complete if you think about what Al asked for. So kids, remember, if you ever die and go to hell and are presented with the opportunity to make a deal with the devil, just make sure you get really, really specific about the details. I grew up watching The Twilight Zone. I can tell you the devil is in the details. You got to read the fine print. You got to really make sure that these soul selling contracts are spelled out very clearly, or else you're going to be in for a surprise.
And while you're in hell, call the law firm of Johnny Cochran and Robert Kardashian.
Defense attorneys at law. Demonic defense attorneys at law. That's why we call it. That's why I'm going to call it. Look over my contract when I'm in hell. Violator shows up, I guess, to console Spawn. I guess, by the way, we see this countdown still going down. It's now at 8821. So it does seem to be some kind of clock that is tick, tick, ticking. So the Spawn, this Violator shows up. He's like, yo, my Spawn dude, remember me? We didn't get a chance to share our common interests, like killing and maiming and slaughtering and destroying. Doing that thing really does a number on my voice, not gonna lie.
I'm impressed you made it this far.
He says, all the things you did when you were there with the government, remember? And I could have a million laughs together, you and I. And as he's laughing, his face slowly expands and slowly turns again into the scary monster version of the Violator. And Spawn says, I don't know who or what you are, but I guarantee you picked the wrong time. So Spawn is in no way frightened by his transformation into this creature. He says, if you're from the same hell pit I came from, then I've got a message to send back to your boss. And Violator says, good. They said you had a lot of spunk, so let's see how much heart you have. And he pulls out Spawn's heart. He says, ah, that was sure simple. Master will be pleased. And then he's just kind of talking to himself. He's very satisfied with himself. He believes that he just took care of the Spawn that easily. Rips out his heart, decides he's just going to walk away, leaves Spawn's body laying there in the alley. As he's walking away, we see a voice say off screen, Violator. And Violator turns around and Spawn says, who said anything about being human? And Spawn is holding his own heart, as you see the green hole in, he's not holding his heart yet, but Violator is still holding it. But at this point, there's just a hole in Spawn's heart, the hole in his chest where his heart was pulled out, and didn't seem to bother him at all. He's ready to boogie.
It's pretty metal.
What'd you think of issue 3 here, as we're finally about to get a big showdown after a couple issues of buildup between Violator and the Spawn?
I just hope people realize how when this comic came out, it was not conventional in terms of how they were telling this type of story. I mean, you've got around the same time, you've got the reinvigorated Ghost Rider series where they go from Johnny Blaze to Danny Ketch, who's really the ideal Ghost Rider. You've got James O'Barr's The Crow. You've got a whole bunch of indie comics that are out kind of like this. For Spawn to have become so popular so fast, it's because it was truly different. And now we look at it and we think it's pretty regular, but really, like, this was a big deal in storytelling.
Yeah, and it was pretty unique. Like, I don't think anyone is going to accuse Todd McFarlane of being, you know, a Shakespeare or an Alan Moore or a Neil Gaiman type of writer, but he is, I think, an underrated storyteller, especially from these early issues. Like, this is not mind-blowing stuff, but it is unique. It is, especially for this time, for the early 90s here. You didn't see this kind of storytelling done in comic books. And as always, like, Todd's strength is the visual end of things, and he really uses these stunning visuals to really carry the story. But I do like what he's done with some of these characters here. Like, I can really hear the voice of Violator. I can really hear the voice of Malebolgia. I can really hear and feel Al Simmons' pain. So I think in some ways Todd might be kind of a little bit underrated of a writer. Like, he's not an amazing writer, but he's not a bad writer at all. I mean, and I think that kind of speaks to the success of this book, because, you know, all these number ones did baller numbers. You know, Spawn number one, Savage Dragon number one, Youngblood number one was still, I think, one of the top-selling comic books of all time. But Youngblood faded very quickly. Why? Because it was just all fluff and no substance. I mean, I recently read those couple Youngblood books for Tales from the Fuck It Pile, which our patron Justin is having sent to his house as we speak. Look, they're flashy. Rob Liefeld does flashy Rob Liefeld art in all of these books, but there's very little substance there story-wise, whereas I think for Spawn, there's more substance. There really is, like, a story being told here. We are getting to know these characters, and Todd is really painting sort of a unique story for us, both visually and through his writing. So, you know, I think it definitely is probably... I think Spawn is a little bit underrated storytelling wise. I think we always think of Todd McFarlane, I don't even know how to say his name. I say it different every time. and his sort of splashy, visual style. But at least in these early issues, especially when compared to a lot of the other Image books, I would put this right behind. Obviously, I'm biased here because Savage Dragon is my favorite book of all time. But I would put Spawn right behind Savage Dragon in terms of presenting an actually compelling story and decent writing, along with the amazing visual, which of course all of these creators brought into the table.
Absolutely.
All right, moving on. final issue we're going to look at today, Spawn issue number 4. First of all, what do you think of the cover of this one? Just this shot of the Violator and all his scary-ass glory with his drool coming out of his scary mouth. I like how the Violator is kind of like an amalgamation. He looks like a spider sort of with these scary eyes, but at the same time looks like a demon. And then just the way his body is formed is so just unique and scary and weird. And I'm a really big fan of Todd's design of the Violator.
Man, my parents were not letting me pick that up when I was a kid.
Not a fan.
No.
Luckily, my parents didn't screen my books. I just went right to my room. I was like, yeah, came back for the comics. I'll see you in a couple hours. Bye-bye.
I told you what happened with Morbius issue 1.
Remind me. Did you tell that on this podcast before?
I think a long time ago. I was picking...
Did they take it from you or something once they saw it?
Yeah, I wanted to get it, and they looked at it, and it was Morbius with blood dripping down his mouth, and they were like, you're not reading this now. I was like 8 at the time.
Like, you know I'm going to buy this when I'm older and have money, right?
Yeah.
So we come in here and we start off by seeing the Violator's scary ass hand holding Spawn's heart as we see the visual letters all throughout. Thump, 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 thump. So we see and feel the heart beating as it's just bloodily dripping all over the Violator's hand. And, you know, the visuals are just, you know, this is Todd at his prime. This is Todd at his finest. And you can tell that he, you know, his art on Spider-Man was awesome. His art on everything he did has been awesome. But I feel like there's a little more, like, because this is his baby, this is his creation. I just feel the heart. No pun intended. I feel the heart that Todd puts into this. I did not intend to do that at all. Violator is pissed off, though. He's really mad at the devil, at the Malbolgia. He's saying, he's kind of doing a little monologue. He's like, what's going on here? Like, Spawn is alive. You said I'd be stronger than the Spawn. And then he basically just, Al Simmons or Spawn, just takes his heart right back, uses his power to suck it away, and puts it right back in. But we also see at the same time that clock, that countdown clock is still a ticking and ticking and ticking. So then we see, finally, a big-ass battle, and Spawn and Violator just go at it. Spawn is using his magic green powers of sorts. It's not really clear exactly what Spawn's powers are, but yeah, he's got chains, he's got energy stuff, and he's in a battle. So he's blasting Violator, and he blasts a hole right through the Violator. This is pretty cool. And also in the battle, Spawn loses an arm. So these two have just totally fucked each other up along the way here. And Violator's ranting at him. He's like, you idiot! You're not the only one that can survive an organ transplant. I had the power long before you stumbled upon it. He's like, so what's your point? He's like, my point, dear boy, if you're looking to play the old eye for an eye game, I'm not doing the Danny DeVito voice anymore because now he's Beast Violator, so I'm trying to differentiate.
Now you've gone to John Leguizamo.
Exactly. I have range. I have range, casters of future animated Spawn projects. You're a bigger fool than I thought. Allow me to demonstrate. And he just kind of throws Spawn and throws him into the alley, and yeah, they're going at it. Violator again is super scary. I love how this one panel, when he comes and just approaches, is just approaching Spawn with these big scary, like, he has these horns that come out of the side of his head, and I really think he's just an incredible creation from Todd McFarlane. He says, you know, but until such time, he's like, we can really work together. We could be something together. We can go on a killing spree together. But until then, it's my job to show you the ropes until you're ready to lead this army from hell. Just hope I don't strangle you with them. So it appears that Violator is not necessarily here to kill Spawn. He's here to maybe be a sort of mentor. But when you're a demonic creature, you have kind of funny ways about, you know, going about your mentorship.
More like apparently. A parole officer.
A parole. Yeah, that's probably a better description. Then Spawn goes and shoots his energy again at him, and then Violator, this is when Violator rips Spawn's arm off in, again, very, very graphic fashion. And then on the next panel, we see the appearance. He's finally showed up. Malbolgia has appeared, and he is much larger, at least in this panel, than Spawn or Violator. They really do a good job making him visually appear. Now, I'm not sure if he's supposed to be physically manifesting in the real world here, because if he's this big, this would be all over the news. Like, he's huge. Like, he's as big as these, like, buildings in the background here when he appears here. So
I think it's called the, and I'm probably wrong, so take this with a grain of salt, if the ethereal range, where it's between the physical world and the other world, whether it be hell or something else. It's an in-between.
Well, if anybody would know about that, it's the Ghost Hunter himself here. So I will take your word. I will take your word for that.
Gracias.
Anyway, Malbolgia has showed up, and he's going on a rant. like Devil Do. And basically Malbolgia tells Spawn that, you know, yeah, he made this deal. He created him. He's like, you know, I gave the both of you far too much credit. It is not necessary to mutilate each other when neither of you can die. Like a pair of jealous siblings, you don't realize the two of you are part of the same family. And like it or not, I'm your daddy. And like a good parent, I can see I need to share some of my insights. So you two boils and know exactly what's going on. Destiny and damnation, you control neither. So even though you struggle to make sense of what's happening, it doesn't matter because I run both your lives. So, you know, the Violator will become, he's a recurring character throughout this series. And he first appears as evil. He certainly is evil, but he becomes a little bit of a nuanced character because he is also basically just a slave of this Malbolgia as well. He's just kind of doing his own bidding. And just like Malbolgia manipulated Spawn into this deal, Violator has been somewhat manipulated and lied to along the way here as well too. And then Spawn just yells at him, "Go to hell." And then Violator says, don't worry, Spawn. He already has. Then Malbolgia just keeps going off and going on this long rant. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But basically, Malbolgia tells Spawn that, and this is where we kind of figure out what that countdown is, that green energy countdown. He tells Spawn, like, look, you have all these powers. You could do a lot of shit here. But just so you know, the more energy you use, the closer that you get to a second death. So you might want to kind of be careful about how you use this power of yours. Meanwhile, Violator's really pissed off. Violator just screams, "Hey, what about me? How about a little something for my effort? Look, boss, I did..." This is like an amalgamation of the Danny DeVito and the creature voice. "I think I did a hell of a job here. Kept an eye on some sort of the criminal activity. Made the cops think there's a lunatic on the loose." So I guess this was... I don't really understand really the plan where he was going around killing mobsters so they would think a lunatic was on the loose. I'm not really sure what the point of that was, but whatever.
I think Todd McFarlane just wanted to kill some people on paper.
Yeah, that seems that way. Even put a bit of fear into Spawn's heart. Speaking of which, no one warned me of his powers when I got this assignment. So he thinks that Spawn has no powers. He's like totally shocked when this guy had all these powers. He's like, I mean, look at this arm. Not a pretty sight. And this hole in my belly, it's worse than a bloody ulcer. And Malbolgia yells, "Silence! You have failed miserably. It's incompetence like you that make my battle against God so laborious. I sometimes think that there are traitors among us. You, Violator, are a sad excuse for hell. You, my erratic child, are being grounded." And he turns Violator back into his human form. And then Danny DeVito Violator says, Hey, I can't change forms! And now he is stuck. Poor guy. He is stuck in this clown form. Violator is getting the raw end of the deal here. He's trying to please his papa. He's trying to do the right thing. Trying to be the mentor / parole officer for Spawn. And what does he get? He gets turned back into this fat Danny DeVito clown self. Did you feel any sympathy for Violator here?
None.
Yeah, no. He hasn't earned it yet. Maybe down the road. We'll see. Yeah, but Violator
is... He needs
is,
to get a Disney prequel origin film like Cruella and Maleficent.
Yeah, wait for the Violator origin film. Starring a young, digitally remastered Danny DeVito.
From Disney, before he was a clown killer from hell.
It's a musical.
Misunderstood. I wish Malbolgia would pick me.
You notice, man, I can picture Malbolgia as totally as like a Disney bad guy. Very, I can definitely see him being Disneyfied. You notice the Violator is wearing an Image Comics t-shirt here? They like to do that a lot.
Oh,
in these
my
books.
Gosh, he is.
Yeah. Violator is mad, and yeah, I put Violator's pissed, and he basically just storms off and huffs. So we'll see Violator a little bit down the road, but that's all we're going to get out of Violator up to this point. Meanwhile, Spawn is walking around town wearing a trench coat because he doesn't want to walk around town wearing the cape and everything, and he certainly doesn't want to walk around town as White Spawn, as White Al Simmons. He has no interest in that, so he opts for the classic trench coat and hat look. And then as he's walking down the street, he hears these kids. They're saying, "Look, it's that new superhero." And this kid's like, "Yeah, man, let's go check him out. Oh, man, I didn't think he really existed. Hey, I saw him first." And Spawn's just like, What? How did you know?" And they're like, "Get out of the way, mister. Move." And they're like, look, it's that dragon guy from Chicago. And they're looking at, oh, this isn't in Chicago. This is in New York. I just kept saying Chicago because you said Chicago earlier. This is New York.
I can't make you fun of it because it looks like Chicago.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, these cities are all the same, basically, at this point. But
welcome to Gotham.
They're looking at these pictures, these images of Savage Dragon. So, you know, know, just more nods to the shared image universe, so to speak. But yes, Bond is not really known as a hero. He's not really known at all at this point. Meanwhile, we see that Wanda had basically, she wakes up in the house in bed with Terry, and basically she had a bad dream. She had a dream about Al, and that does it. That does it for Spawn issue 4. That pretty much wraps up the introductory storyline. In the following issues, we kind of have some more kind of side adventures. We get a little more from Sam and Twitch, and it really is kind of a slow build, the main storyline here of Spawn. But at least in this initial arc, the main premise of Spawn here is that Malbolgia wants him to lead his army of darkness to battle God and all this stuff. But the catch is, as he mentioned, Spawn has this kind of countdown, this timer. It's not a time countdown, but it's an energy power countdown. So Spawn really has to be smart about how he uses this power, because he is basically slowly dying, and he knows that this time, you know, whatever chance he might have to see his wife again, even though she's married with a kid to his best friend, that's going to be gone once this timer runs out. So that is kind of like the dilemma of Spawn, which I found an interesting twist to the character, him having to live with this knowledge that even though he's imbued with these powers, they do have a limit, and that when he reaches that limit, he's going to face a second death. So what did you think of that kind of caveat to Spawn's powers that we saw?
I mean, they usually don't bring up the weakness on the offset of a lot of these heroes. It's very much set in the way that a video game is, because you could be a giant badass, you know, Marine Commando demon superhero in a video game, but you have to be able to die somehow. So for me, it kind of reminded me of, like, how would you set up a person's fault or weakness in a video game? So I really liked that.
Yeah, well, that does it. That's going to do it for our look at this initial run, the introduction to Spawn from issue 1 through 4. Remzo, you want to start us off with your ratings?
Yeah, absolutely. I keep it basic. This is good for new readers. This is good for longtime comic book vets, and it gets A's on both. I love the story. I love the layout of how they're not typically following the typical origin story, per se. While we're still getting a hero's journey out of it, it's not following it scene by scene, stage by stage, as you would get, which allows you to really kind of fall into that mystery of it. Beyond that, McFarlane really understands the tone and the way that these characters speak. He really gets them on an individual level. I think it's awesome. I'm giving the storytelling a 4.5, and I'm also going to go ahead and just say that, you know, while his artwork isn't for everybody, it's hard pressed to find anyone else that could ever do Spawn the way that McFarlane does, especially with the fact that as he's coming into the 90s, he's just owning it. I love the costumes, I love the background, I love everything about it, how he does text bubbles. It's all McFarlane goodness. I'm giving it a 4.5 for a total score of 9 out of 10.
Wow, a very high score for Spawn from Remzo. And I got to say, I don't think I had read these. I'm almost positive I have not reread these issues since I first read them when they were first published, aging myself a tad. But I got to say, I knew the art was going to be awesome. So I'll start there, because it's Todd McFarlane. It's awesome. It's perfect, especially for this book. And like I said, it's more than just the art itself. It's the panels. It's the layout. And Todd has always had really unique panels and layouts. This is really a signature of a lot of his Spider-Man work, too. And I think it's hard to say he's underrated. He's known as one of the best artists in comics. So maybe he's not underrated on the art. But I think that maybe his panel layouts are maybe not talked about enough, because I think that is really one of his really, really strong suits. And like you said, the way he uses the lettering as part of the art a lot of the times, I think he really does an excellent job, and not going to quite give it a 5, not the best work he's ever done, but it's pretty darn close. So I'm going to agree with you on the art at a 4.5, and I was really pleasantly surprised by the story. And like I said, like the visual element is such a large part of the storytelling here that in many ways it's hard to fully separate the art from the writing, but we don't really have to, because it's all from the same person. And I'm not going to go quite as high as you did. Like, I don't think this is that high level of incredible writing. Like, I liked it. I enjoyed it. I'm not as sucked into it as I might have been from some of the other books. I certainly wasn't as sucked into it as I was from, to me, the all-time greatest Image comic, that being Savage Dragon, but it was very good. It was actually much better than I thought it would be, than I remembered it being.
It aged well.
Yeah, it did age well. It aged much better than I thought. And, you know, This book goes in a lot of different directions, but I think in terms of a character introduction, in terms of just, you know, giving us enough information to understand the motivations of the character, understand what drives Al Simmons, but also leaving enough mystery to not really fully know what's going on, leaving enough out there for us to want us to kind of see how it progresses, which is how an introduction to a new character in a new series should be. So I'm not going to go quite as high as you, but I'm going to give the writing a 4, which is higher than I thought I would, and I'm giving it before I went into this. So I would definitely say I was pleasantly surprised. So I'm going to give us a total of an 8.5. Between the two of us, that is an SPC grand total of 17.5 out of 20. And that is very, very good. That is an absolute recommend.
Absolutely. If you happen to get this in graphic novel or the occasional director's cut anniversary issues, like I've been able to grab for issue 1, it's definitely something you'll want to go ahead and add to your own personal collection.
For sure. So that being said, before we wrap up, anything you want to tell our listeners about perhaps how they could support this program?
Yeah, some basic house notes. Do you want more of me and Mark in your life? I mean, who doesn't? I think we're pretty awesome. Absolutely. So go ahead and check out patreon.com/secondprintpod. You can go ahead and get weekly editions of Remso Rants, Tales from the Fuck It Pile, early released episodes. And if you really want to be awesome, I've been going ahead and grabbing hardcover graphic novels from local comic book shops in the Milwaukee area, sending them out to our epic crossover level patrons. They get a brand new hardcover graphic novel every 3 months, as well as all the other bonus content that you get for the previous levels. And we recently recorded a quick segment with our Kirby Club King, El Presidente of the Kirby Club himself, Eric. He gets to go ahead and produce an episode every 3 months. If you want to get in the queue and actually get Mark and I to cover a certain story, debate on a certain topic, you want to go ahead and join us and talk about how you became a fan, why you love the things that you do, go ahead and
support us. You can be a star. You can be a star here on SBC. You too.
It's second only to immortality itself. Other than that, patreon.com/secondprintpod. And new and reoccurring content over on our website, secondprintcomics.com.
I think that about sums it up. Don't forget to, of course, follow us on social media. Twitter at secondprintpod. Instagram at secondprintpod. We are at secondprintpod. Absolutely everywhere. And we hope to see you there and everywhere. And, of course, the best way, not the best way, there are lots of good ways, another great way to help support the show. If you don't feel like tossing us a few bucks, but if you do enjoy this content, we would ask that you leave us a 5-star rating and a great review on Apple Podcasts. That is the best way to leave us a review. That's the best way to help us move up in the old algorithms. That being said, I want to thank you all for listening. And Remso, what is our message to the listeners? What do we ask of them each and every week? To do what?
Hell and back, folks. Read comics! Change the world! Good night, America.
Adios.